Hey, folks, March Madness, it's the month of opportunity. We've all been there. You're waiting for this big moment, but then the moment arrives and you don't know what to do. Don't end up like me at the junior prom. Let's get our friend in here from Batavia Downs, Ryan Hasenauer, as he talks our How to Bet event.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We are setting up something with you guys from Trainwreck, from OTB and Batavia Downs. We're super excited to be on board with you guys. We're going to be doing a How to Bet event on March 30th, which is coming up here pretty soon. It's some of these prep races that are getting people ready for the Kentucky Derby, which, of course, is May 4th this year on Star Wars Day. And just like we're seeing with the tournament right now, last weekend before the actual tournament, we saw all these conference championships. Horse racing kind of works the same way. If you win one of these smaller races, these prep races, you'll earn the points necessary to get your horse into the big dance, in this case, the Kentucky Derby. And so what we're going to be doing is for the next two Saturdays, we're going to be doing events and we're going to be inviting the people of Western New York to come to them. And what are we going to be doing? Well, we're going to be teaching you how to bet on horses. The summer is almost here, and so is spring, and so is the Triple Crown season, the summer at Saratoga, all these exciting things. And here at OTB and at Batavia Downs, we want to get everybody in Western New York tuned in on how to bet on the horses. You know, you look at a program, you maybe not familiar with how to read one. Well, we want to help you out. We're going to have this event. It's going to be at the Whirly OTB upstairs where Champions is. But we're going to be hosting something with Nick the Railbird. He's one of our OTB handicappers. Nick's going to teach you how to read a program. We're going to give everybody in attendance who signs up in advance a $5 wager that you can use to bet on the Arkansas Derby or the Florida Derby, which are the two Kentucky Derby prep races that will be happening on March 30th. And we're going to give everybody a free beer. So you can't beat that. You got to sign up, though, by emailing me. It's you're going to email me at rhasenauer. You can see my name on the screen there. So rhasenauer@westernotb.com. Only the people that sign up in advance are going to get those special gifts as you arrive. And we're going to have some prize drawings for the people who come in and are wagering with us. So we're going to have some Thurman Thomas signed memorabilia. Of course, Thurman is OTB and Batavia Downs is ambassador. We're also going to have some prizes related to Batavia Downs, like stay in plays. So we're hoping that those of you that are in the mood for horse racing can join us on March 30th at the Whirly OTB, starting around 6:15 and going just about until 7:30. Learn how to bet on those horses before the summer at Saratoga and before the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown season. And just going to have some fun.
Folks, make your spring a trifecta and get to Western OTB. And obviously, email rhasenauer@westernotb to register for the How to Bet event. Where Batavia Downs, you know the train never stops. The region's premier entertainment destination. Folks, welcome back to the show where it's not wrestling with your conscience. It's not wrestling with your budget. It is wrestling with emotion. And my goodness, it seems like we're saying this every week. It seems like we're saying this every month. What a time to be a wrestling fan. The road to WrestleMania is only getting better. The shows on AEW are only getting better. So let's get our panel in here and see what they're thinking of our show today. We got Slick Al, Slick Saturday. We got the Prophet, Red Ryan, Rob Ryan. And we got the head of the table of wrestling with emotion, Michael J. Partham. I'll acknowledge him. I'll throw one up.
I don't acknowledge
gents,
him.
I know real quick that we're going to start with AEW here. But man, I feel like I absolutely, I don't even know about last night. I feel like I got final bossed.
I feel like it's a fever dream.
Who would have thought a few years ago that WWE could put on that type of show? But wow.
With all
who
those guys.
Years ago that The Rock would be showing up on weekly television and not just sporadically.
Unannounced.
Imagine telling someone 5 years ago that in 2024, 2 weeks out from a Mania, two of the biggest stories were going to be The Rock and CM Punk. But with that said, let's get into our wrestling talk of the past week, and let's start over in All Elite Wrestling. Like we said in the intro, AEW continues to put on banger after banger after banger. So, gents, what are you thinking about AEW with the new faces and the new places? We got Okada. We got Mercedes. We got Okada with some title aspirations, some title dreams, Parthy.
Okada, you mean?
Yeah, didn't I say Okada?
You mean Ospreay or something? Because Okada's already won a title as it is.
He just won the title. I know. I was leading. I was trying to tee you up, Parthy.
He's always just got to be like that.
Well, are we talking about like world title aspirations for Okada? Because I could definitely see that. I could see that for Ospreay first.
Just talk about Okada, dude.
Who are we talking about? Okada or Ospreay?
Okada.
All right, Slick Saturday. What do you think of AEW the last couple weeks?
It's great. These new faces, this new energy, this new theme, this new set that they're bringing.
I like the new set.
Love the new set. You know, I'm a big tunnel guy. I'm glad the tunnels are back. I don't care if it looks a little like an impact zone. Love that they're back to the original colors. For a while there, it was looking a bit stale and a bit too forced with the design and setup. It looked like they were trying to be a sports entertainment company, and they're a professional wrestling company. It feels like a revitalized AEW, a new era almost. We talk about the new era of WWE as well, but AEW is constantly trying to change its era to give fans a new sense, almost like seasons of a show. And it seems like we're in that fourth one now, almost similar to 2021 when they started bringing in all these new faces as well. A lot of those and their main faces as of now, either injured or sidelined for some other reason, all these new faces bringing some refreshment to the roster and ultimately stacking it for when those other guys get back, including some pillars that are missing at the moment.
Seriously, we got some personnel that we'll be getting back, but in the meantime, seems like the roster is holding its own, Rob Ryan.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I love what they're doing. For a little bit, AEW, if people want to admit it or not, it was on the downhill. Their ratings were going down. Obviously, the attendance was nowhere near what they needed to survive. They always had the pay-per-views, but now their weekly television shows are picking up. All these new faces. Like Slick said, it's kind of like another like restart, like 2021, where they were getting all these new faces. And I think these new faces are here to stay. Unlike, obviously, we know one, we'll talk about them later. That 2021 group, some of them aren't there anymore, and some of them cause problems. But I mean, some of the people they've gotten so far has really skyrocketed AEW, which is what they needed with how good WWE is doing right now.
Well, with the people that they brought in from the production side, from the WWE, you can tell that the production's a lot slicker. It's a lot more focused. Everything has a sort of meaning. They're not rushing through things, and they're not dwelling on too many things. They're trying to put a little more storyline into their segments, and the new talent is definitely being featured in significant matches. We had Okada winning the Continental Crown. He's been there, what, less than a month? And he's already a champion. We can definitely see Will Ospreay winning a championship at some point here after he gets his dream match with Danielson. And Mercedes is basically going to be on the fast track to winning the women's championship at some point, at least before, if not at All In. So all these new faces are getting basically skyrocketed to the moon. And like Rob said, you almost have to do that with guys like MJF and Kenny Omega and Hangman Page being sidelined for various reasons, injuries or other personal problems. But AEW feels refreshed. A lot of people have been saying the last 3 or 4 weeks have felt pretty focused, and it's like almost the AEW of old, so to speak, but from 2021 when free agents were coming in and all these great segments were happening.
Mute Monster. It does feel like AEW 2021. You got new faces, you got new places, and we didn't even mention a new guy who's also got a title. Cope, and the Cope Open is back. What did we think of this match last week? We had the crowd singing his song. I thought that was honestly amazing. AEW has had no problem filling buildings when they have, you know, attractions and things like that. I think really the only thing they have to work on is just bumping up the numbers a little bit on the ratings and then filling out those stadiums for sure, Slack.
Yeah, my thing with that is, you know, every time AEW is doing something big where people want to see exactly that thing in person, Cope in Toronto winning the TNT title, Big Business, The First Dance, they can sell out an arena. It's not an attendance problem. It's just that people don't necessarily feel the need to pay $50 to go see their weekly wrestling every single week, even if it is in their town. They can just watch on TV. Whereas WWE, you have such a reputation and are so many people are known to you that every week, no matter what city you go to, people are going to come out and bring their families, their mother, their Aunt Sally, as Maniac would say, just because WWE is in town and it might be their only opportunity to go see such a spectacle. AEW, obviously, a lot less on the radar. Real wrestling fans will show up, though,
when the time is right and the occasion is happening.
Seriously, the occasion is happening. Rob, who you got in the Cope Open? Who do you want to see go after this TNT title?
I really have no preference. I just kind of wanted to see Copeland get that title. Obviously, we've had this path of Christian, and his character right now is one of a kind. I mean, what other person's going to willingly go out on television and do what he does every week? And Copeland, he's really deserved it. Obviously, he's had that long time. Obviously, he's been back for a few years wrestling, but he's been through injury galore. I don't think he had a title when he was returned to WWE. So I think he really deserved this. This is what he wanted to do. He wanted to finally get back. And what other way to do it than to face his best friend of over 20 years, Christian? I mean, I could care less who he faces.
First title in almost 15 years.
How about a rematch for our boy DG, Danny Garcia? That's going to be in the works, so to speak, for the Cope Open. And as far as where this is going to go, I'd say, you know, Swerve is basically, you know, the heir apparent for the AEW world title. So why don't we give Will Ospreay at some point, you know, a TNT championship run to get his feet wet like Okada just did with the Continental Crown?
Not a terrible idea. I kind of like the idea of the Cope Open. I feel like Copeland can do the TNT title. Yeah, I liked it at the start of AEW, and it felt perceived as almost like it when they didn't have an intercontinental title or a continental title, it felt like their intercontinental title to me. But with that said, I feel like it's kind of lost a little bit of luster when it went to, you know, kill switch and then it went, you know, back and forth. So I loved Christian. Don't get me wrong. I love the angle. I love the storyline. But I think there's an opportunity here for Cope over the next 3 to 6 months to almost have a similar run to when John Cena took over the U.S. title and kind of did his open challenge every week. So I'm excited to see what he will do with it. Speaking of excited to see what he'll do with it, let's welcome to the show at this time, Dwayne O'Mania. Dwayne, we're talking some Cope Open AEW. Anyone over there you'd like to see challenge Cope for this title?
I'm going to go with Parthy just because obviously he's very well deserving and he's possibly one of the biggest faces in AEW right now is Will Ospreay. You've seen a lot of the comparisons, you know, with the recent push with Ricochet and WWE, and the athleticism is incredible, just the ability to put on a match the way he does. He got the contract he got for a reason, and when you pay somebody that kind of money, you give them opportunities like this. And, I think Will Ospreay should be at the top of that list.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that would be a match and a half for sure. And I honestly don't know even know what could happen there. I think there would have to be some outside hijinks or something, but I could think those two could cook for 15
That's
to
the
20.
Only problem I have with giving, like, a guy that you want to take to the moon the immediate Cope Open is just because I think you got to give like Copeland at least a couple weeks before you give him a Garcia, because one of those guys you can't just have buried again for this title. That you've already fumbled with Garcia plenty of times. Fans are starting to get momentum on him again. Will Ospreay too, him losing to Copeland right after coming in, that would not do him any favors. I think give Copeland a little run, maybe bring in some you could bring in some Ring of Honor guys, other guys that are on Collision as well. I'm not too familiar with who shows up every Saturday, but there's plenty to choose from and plenty of great matches to be had for Copeland, who is in a locker room full of new faces.
It was Daddy Magic and DG that interfered last week, right? Kingdom.
Yes, it was.
When he signed with AEW too, he actually, I remember reading, he made a list of wrestlers he wanted to get in the ring with. Outside of obviously Christian Cage. So I think you can even look at that list from that interview and probably generate an idea of what, you know, he might want to do, because that was his whole reasoning outside of the obvious of going to AEW was just the ability to have matches that he's never had before. So bearing that in mind, I would think you probably go back and look at that interview and just see who he listed. I want to say even Daniel Garcia was one guy too that was on that list.
It's no coincidence that he's already, you know, in cahoots with Copeland in that storyline. So,
we're talking about Daniel Garcia. He was actually on that list too.
I was agreeing with you.
I could see DG getting a quick shot based on the fact that he kind of helped Copeland win the title by, you know, staving off the interference and the patriarchy, et cetera, et cetera. I could see that happening, but I would not see either side winning if that match happened. I would see some outside interference after a good 10 to 15 minute match by some kind of heel for sure. But hey, get out of here. I'm a mark. And speaking of marking out, the only thing I haven't loved on AEW TV in the past couple weeks is Timeless Tony taking a pin last week. Are you kidding me? The hell are we doing, TK?
Roman Reigns, but with that said, Gagnet.
No, we can't have the champ taking a pin, Partha. You know that's a golden rule. You know that's a golden rule.
Partha,
I know it's not desirable, but I mean, more the shiners come out, you know.
That's true. That's true. Okay, but with that said, I want to talk to you guys because we were talking all 2022. We were talking all 2023. When is AEW going to get back to 2021 AEW where it's just exciting every week? The shows feel like they're literally going at breakneck speed. And so far in 2024, I don't know about you guys, but it feels like they've done that. So I have the, you know, the Chiron here. Where does 2024 AEW rank TV comparatively the last 10 years? I say it's in the top 15 to 20% of what's been put out there. I think it absolutely washes anything that WWE was doing in the 2010s. And that's with respect. I mean, SmackDown Live was obviously solid. You had the land of opportunity with Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan, et cetera, et cetera. You had some good moments with Seth Rollins, et cetera. But I think it's in the top 15 to 20%. Where would you guys rank it as far as the last 10 years? And I guess in the sphere of AEW. Slick?
Yeah, I'm right there with you that it smokes basically anything WWE's done in the past decade. And that's not even a diss. I mean, this is still a very recent regime that Triple H has had where he's started to take the control and make that creative a lot better of a product. I do love this AEW 2024. I'm going to rank it a tiny bit below 2021 because 2021 AEW is still so, it was a lot more new than it is now. We've already seen this kind of surge with AEW. 2021, we'd never seen anything like that where all these guys were coming in on a weekly basis. Pop, pop, match, banger, pop. Everything was happening at the right time, and it just never stopped. So I'm going to put it maybe like five notches below 2021 AEW, but I think it has a lot of room to improve. I think 2024 could get right back to that era it was in 3 years ago this summer when you potentially get a big face like MJF back, Kenny Omega makes his way back, and then you have your second show at Wembley Stadium. That seemed to be the hottest point for AEW last year, as it should have been, given that they sold out Wembley Stadium, first ever wrestling show in Wembley Stadium of such. And to have it again with that momentum coming out of the summer would just be huge. So I think they can get there again, but it's right below 2021, in my opinion.
Yeah, first I got to make you take a step back. You said last decade of WWE, which obviously is not the case. I'd rank, like Maniac said, the 2010s. It's definitely better than the 2010s. The last few years, probably ever since really the Bloodline story took place, that's when WWE's been on the up, I'd say 2022-ish. But I would have to agree. It's probably about 10, 15%. Obviously, you can't rank it above 2021 yet. Obviously, it's only been a few months. But like Slick said, I think it can get there. And if it does, I'd probably put it in the top 10% of wrestling in the last 10 years.
Parthy?
I would definitely put it above anything in the late 2010s. Don't forget, you know, in the early 2010s, we had stuff like Summer of Punk, Yes Movement. There was a lot of hot times in there. But once, you know, Punk left, Brian was injured and was away from wrestling for a while, at least wrestling on screen. Sort of gotten a little stale at that point. And of course, with the Bloodline and certain people coming back, things have picked up for WWE a lot recently. I'd put it, for as far as AEW, I'd put it a little below 2021 because of the storytelling they had done up to that point and the free agents coming in, making it a lot hotter. I would say because they're becoming a lot more focused on monthly pay-per-views, and we'll see if that goes into a streaming deal because, you know, plunking down $40 to $60 every month for a pay-per-view, it's going to focus the storytelling a little bit more, you know, as far as the buildup goes. But I don't know about, you know, going back to the old pay-per-view model, $40 to $60 shelling it out for pay-per-view every month. So I think they're going to have to quickly get on HBO Max or something in order to really get people invested in watching the pay-per-views and their builds, the builds of the pay-per-views. But I think with the free agents and their new production and their new focus on storytelling and their focus on building to having short builds to pay-per-views, I think it might have the chance to surpass 2021, at least as far as continuous quality storytelling.
All right, Dwayne Mania, close us out here.
Yeah, I would say in for in terms of WWE, I would say like mid 2010s, that was, you know, they were putting some great product. I remember shortly after that, like, is kind of when I kind of lost interest, but just wasn't as committed. And then coming out, I would say going into COVID, it was starting to get good. And then obviously COVID happens and everything just stops. And then coming out of COVID, for sure, things really started to head on the up and up for WWE. To an extent, I agree with Slick. But going back to what Parthy said, I think this is by and far, this is the best storyline we've seen, long-term storytelling that we've seen probably in two decades, I'd even say. Like, can you, I mean, even the Yes Movement, and what that was. That wasn't near what this is, and just the layers that we've seen from the Bloodline storyline. When you go back, you know, him assembling his family, starting with Jimmy, and then bringing in Jay after his injury, and then the introduction of Solo coming out of NXT. Just everything that's gone into this storyline, and how you kind of think it's going to die, and then they bring in another layer, and it's right back again. And now you have the final boss in The Rock, and I don't know, man. I'm hard pressed to find a storyline in the last 20 years that's got me glued to the TV every Monday and Friday night the way the Bloodline storyline has.
Gotcha. Yeah, it has been. Like we said, WWE continues to cook. Let's go from AEW to WWE now with that talk. But first, it's Trainwreck Trivia presented by Batavia Downs, the region's premier entertainment destination. Gents, we are going back 15 years. To the 2009 Elimination Chamber. Edge enters as the WWE champion, only to lose his chamber match to start the night. At the end of the night, it's the WWE Heavyweight Championship match. You have figures in this match like John Cena, Rey Mysterio, Chris Jericho. When the last person comes to enter the chamber, they're attacked by Edge, and he takes their spot in the pod. Who did Edge attack at the 2009 Elimination Chamber to take his spot in the pod for the match?
Jeff Hardy?
Christian.
But to be fair, Jeff Hardy was feuding with Edge at this point in window. They had multiple championship matches in the pay-per-views before this.
I feel like I should know.
Randy Orton?
I will give you a hint. He is still an active wrestler.
R-Truth.
Nope.
CM Punk?
Nope.
Kofi Kingston.
Kofi Kingston is correct.
Wow.
Yep, came down, slammed him, concerto equivalent on the steel steps, and Edge takes his spot. If you don't remember, was when this was in the middle of the match. John Cena got hit by a code breaker into a 619 into a spear and was actually eliminated with three competitors left. And this was at the peak of Super Cena in 2009.
Yeah, so that he was the title holder, right?
I believe he was the title
holder. When Kofi was still Jamaican.
Yeah, Kofi was still Jamaican. Kofi was still Jamaican, people happy.
Kofi Kingston making me crazy.
Seriously, making it crazy. And speaking of making it crazy, WWE continues to cook. We've been talking about AEW. I give AEW it's been good. I think it is seriously, and like I said, in the top 15 to 20% of wrestling content the last 10 years. With that said, after Raw last night, after Raw last week, I think I put a message into the Wrestling with Emotion chat, and I was like, wow, you know, I think this is the best Raw I've seen in a long time. Last night's Raw smashed it. Absolutely smashed it from the opening segment. Cody the Rock. I mean, it was almost like, I mean, I don't know. I can't believe that segment was successful with the Rock doing the whisper and walking away, but it ended up playing a huge role in the overall way the night went down. and obviously just had a great effect on the show. So with that said, let's go reverse order. Dwayne Omania, what you saw last night, where does that Raw rank for you? And going forward, where are you on this Bloodline storyline? What do you want to see happen over these next 11 or so days before Mania?
I mean, sometimes I watch Raw, like, you know, a little bit on rewind. I'll start it late just to go through the commercials. And even doing so, like, I knew I was on, I knew I could fast forward through it, but it was so good that I, outside of the commercials, I don't think I fast forward through a single segment or match at all last night, even starting it late. The Rock walking into the ring with Cody, and that just shows how big those two are, how you could literally get the pop that they got together in the ring, and Rock didn't say a word into a microphone. He had his hands behind his back. You know what I mean? Like, there was just, it was just, that's all. And then he just nonchalantly walks out of the ring and goes to the back. And I had chills. I had, like, chills. I'm like, holy crap. And I even said it in the chat. I'm like, do we think that this stuff with Cody and The Rock is overshadowing the actual main event of night two, Roman v. Cody? And I'm actually here for it. Like, I'm all on the, I'm all set on the, on, you know, the woe movement or whatever you want to call it. We want Cody movement, but everything about this buildup for the last 2 years, the different layers of the Bloodline storyline, how they've been able to keep this relevant and interesting, and how it's hopefully going to finally come full circle, you know, night two of Mania. I couldn't be more happier as a wrestling fan, as a WWE fan. This is the most excited I've been in a very long time. And, you know, outside of obviously other sports that, you know, have been miserable to watch, like WWE, you know, is the one, you know, sports programming or sports entertainment programming that actually gets me excited anymore. And that's the God's honest truth. I'm blown away by everything that Hunter has done since he's taken the reins of WWE. And it's cool to see a semblance of the Attitude Era finally back. And I can't wait to see what SmackDown brings and what Raw brings going into Mania and just everything about it, man. I just know where I'm going to be at 8 o'clock on both those nights.
Mute monster.
You muted yourself, bud.
It is cool seeing people on X, on social, being like, wow, this is like what the Attitude Era felt like. Because I know it's not the same, but it really does in its own way. Like, you have Michael Cole. I mean, you have Pat McAfee, who is completely different than anything that was going on with JR, anything that was going on with Jerry the King Lawler back then. But I don't know. It just, his presence, it almost feels like there's a fan at, like, the commentary booth. And then that's kind of like the best thing in the modern day. People love fans watching stuff. So now you've got that with Pat McAfee every week. Parthy, I know you're loving the intricacies of the storytelling. Lay it on me. Where are you at with this Bloodline with under 2 weeks to go till Mania?
I think the Attitude Era comparison is very apt, not just for, you know, the harsher language that's being thrown around, not just by Rock, but now Cody as well. Not just for the upping of the violence, and now we see a little bit of blood on WWE TV. What is this, AEW? Did John Moxley come back to the fold or something? But also because the intricacy of the storyline telling, not just week to week, but within the show itself. Because back in the Attitude Era, we would see the opening segment involving Steve Austin and Vince McMahon, and there'd be some kind of stare down and a making of a match to try and screw over Austin later in the night. And there'd be, you know, segments throughout the night leading up to that main event or leading up to the event, whatever was going to be the main event, whether it's a showdown or a match or whatever. And we got that tonight. We had a little bit of a hint dropped by The Rock and a little bit of a mystery. And we got a word from The Rock and we got a word from Cody, very brief, of course. But it was all leading to, you know, Jey Uso in the main event. And then the Bloodline comes in and then the Cody Avengers come in. And then The Rock just, oh, he's still here. He didn't make his way out. And he does what some people deduced that he actually said he was going to do, which was make Cody bleed. And it's not something that Cody wanted to, you know, frighten his little kid fans out there with that ominous message. So he sort of held that back. But you could put all the pieces together when you, you know, watch it on replay and, you know, try to read The Rock's lips or whatever. But and The Rock just talking trash throughout this absolute beatdown of Cody. I mean, you want to talk about adversity. You want to talk about hard times, as The Rock was yelling at his in his face about. I mean, this is everything that some people, not necessarily me and not necessarily on this panel, but certain people were crying about last year. Cody didn't have enough of this stuff going on where he was facing a whole bloodline's worth of adversity. And now the final boss, The Rock, is getting in his face and getting physical with him. It's very wonderful storytelling. It's very much giving Cody the underdog mentality that he needs going into WrestleMania. And of course, not to talk about storytelling and foreshadowing, John Cena and Steve Austin conveniently on a trailer right where Cody and The Rock are, you know, getting into it with each other. I mean, and we saw something from, I believe, WrestleVotes, who said something to the effect of, hey, those trailers are very deliberate in who they put on there and where they put those trailers. So a little bit of a visual foreshadowing. Triple H likes to do that kind of stuff.
I was going to say, when I first saw this, I absolutely, no. Coincidence. Absolutely nothing. But then I just think back that every aspect, every opportunity that Triple H, Paul Levesque has to do some storytelling when it's not the characters that are actually like interacting at that moment, he kind of does it. So yeah, I mean, I definitely lean that we could be seeing some glass break and we could be seeing some hustle, loyalty, and respect in a couple weekends at Mania. Rob, what'd you think of the cook job last night?
I mean, it's just awesome. There was a certain time after Mania last year where we all were wondering where could the bloodline go after everything that really happened in the middle of last year, leading up to SummerSlam. It felt like maybe they were running dry, but here we are again, back in WrestleMania season, and it's just a whole new bloodline story. That shot last night with Rock coming in, just storming the ring, that was an awesome shot. Just looked like he was like the final boss, basically. The whisper, like people, I think Parthy was mentioning, just the subtle interviews during the night with The Rock and with Cody leading up to the J match with the final boss coming out and attacking Cody throughout the outside. The rain in Chicago, obviously that's not something they planned, but I think that just made it so much better in the rain.
Why did the rain make it so perfect? I have no idea why, but when it went out, it was raining. That instantly got like three times better.
It's something you can't replicate.
Yeah. And then obviously we mentioned it with Stone Cold and Cena. There's been rumors that both of them and Taker will be involved at WrestleMania 40 in some way or the other. And what better way to have those two involved than to face off with The Rock and help Cody, who, remember, before last year's Mania, who on the stage of, I forgot which show it was, who raised Cody's hand to show that he was the next one to lead this company into a new era. Everything that they've done so far has just been outstanding, and we still have two more weeks and two nights to tell this story.
Now, I do want to say, I believe Reigns, when he beat Cena a year and a half ago or whatever, that was clean, though, at SummerSlam, right? It was a rare clean win for Reigns. Seriously,
What was the rules of that match? Was it just a regular match?
Match, but in 2022, Cena got the loudest pop of all time when he returned at Money in the Bank.
Oh my God! It's Cena!
But where is he from Pat McAfee? One of the early moments that aborted from McAfee on the WWE broadcast.
I saw someone. I saw someone refer to this as the Renaissance era of WWE, and to me that's just so appropriate. You got all these big names coming back, making it feel like the Attitude Era, the Renaissance of world wrestling entertainment, what it should be, what it always should have been. Triple H is bringing it back to its roots, so I really love the term, and maybe it'll stick with Attitude and those other eras that WWE has coined.
How about Seriously? The cinema era? I've heard that.
I mean, that was pretty good too. Like I pointed out when we mentioned the rain, that to me that was just cinema. It was so perfect in every aspect. Cody bleeding on the ground as Rock in the rain is saying, "Where you at, Mama Rhodes?" I'm gonna put this blood all over this belt.
Dude, I'm not gonna lie. The final boss is legitimately scary. This is like a character in The Rock where, like, if you were in a boardroom, if you were anything with this guy, I mean, you wouldn't be a little bit frightened. I mean, I just love it. I love The Rock growing up. I love him now. And yeah, I mean, what he can. The look at you now has really got it for me. I don't know how many times he said look at you now last night, but it just sounded so condescending. Like Cody was just a piece of shit just laying there in the rain. It was really amazing. But yeah, so we talked about it. Let's just get a quick vote. Are the Cody Avengers happening at Mania Night 2?
Yes.
Absolutely. They're happening. It's just a matter of who's part of them.
I mean, look at my nickname. Yeah. It's coming. The end game is near.
The end game is near, as per Rob Ryan and his subtitle. Okay, so again, not much to discuss there. But let's discuss this, because I've seen this point brought up a little bit along the memesters, along the wrestling thing. Have Roman and Seth been overshadowed on this build-up to WrestleMania? I mean, most of Seth's action and everything until last night, which we'll get into, has been, you know, talking about the bloodline, facing the bloodline, saying that stopping the bloodline is actually more important to the industry than, you know, almost as important as his title, everything. So I'm curious what you guys think on this. Slick, why don't you start us off? Let's go around the horn. Have Roman and Seth been overshadowed? And is that a bad thing, or have they executed in a way that's been beneficial to all parties?
The short answer for both for me, I think, is yes. I think Seth more than Roman, however. But that's not to his fault entirely. You know, Seth still is sidelined with injury. Not to say he still can't get in a ring and flap his gums, which he did last night very well. Okay, he's cleared, but they're saving him. He's not doing anything else other than flapping his gums. So last night was a good start, but they're taken away from his own match. Whether he's cleared or talking, he's not talking about his own match until last night, 2 weeks out. And the main guy leading that conversation was CM Punk. CM Punk seemed to be more the focus of that world heavyweight title picture last night than Seth Rollins did. And Seth Rollins did make a good point in saying that, coming out and saying, you guys are making an awful lot of decisions for when the champion's not even here. So I think Seth's been a bit more overshadowed than Roman. He's not being outshadowed by anybody, though, because he's still in two main events of WrestleMania. Roman, I think, however, it's okay for him to be a bit overshadowed. Being overshadowed by The Rock is expected. The Rock is the biggest name in all of wrestling right now. And to be his cousin and be right there with him in this new reformed bloodline, it's not a bad thing for The Rock to have the big shadow over you, because then you can turn it into some anger that you're the tribal chief. And hey, Dwayne, you're taking all my spotlight. You might have just cost me the title night too. If that happens, like, we got to settle this. So I think The Rock overshadowing Roman right now is okay, because there's a lot of long-term storytelling directions you can go with it. Seth, I think these next 2 weeks needs to focus solely on his world heavyweight title match and let the talking for the tag match go to Cody, Roman, and The Rock.
Yeah, I think this is a hard question to answer. I think first, I'll start with Seth. I think maybe he's being overshadowed, but I also think it's kind of with the story that's not really being talked about. How many times has Seth beaten Drew for that title already? I think he's sleeping on Drew right now. I think he's just so confident that he's going to win because he's done it multiple times already. So I think that it's not talked about, but I think that has to go into it somehow or the other. For like the diehards, I think some of us will be thinking like that just because they've done it. Seth has beaten three times. Why should he be worried about Drew? Obviously, he should be worried about Drew, but in a storyline aspect, why should he? For Roman, I think it's hard for someone to be built up when there's two matches and the guy rarely shows up. I mean, how are they really going to build something? Obviously, they're building it, and they're going to build it, keep building for 2 weeks. But how do you build something like a one-on-one match without the one of them being there? Cody's there every week. Rock has been there more than Roman. I think they're building this tag team match more just because of the people they have. You can't build a 1v1, like I said, without both of them being there.
Robbie,
just to be clear, though, this goes to Slick and your point, though, Rob, building up the people in the tag match more. You're kidding yourself if you don't think the final boss versus the tribal chief is going to be like a huge like discussion topic over which is a higher title, obviously, or things down the line for sure.
It's the biggest tag match ever. It should be a bit elevated over that. I agree.
What do you got, Parthy?
Rob makes a good point about Rock being there more than Roman. I mean, Rock just got back. He's been absent for a few years, and all of a sudden he's more of a full-timer than his cousin is, who's the champion.
I was going to say that too.
Yeah, so I think that they're both overshadowed, but it's by necessity, because what you essentially have here is two rematches. What we have, like Slick has seen, Slick said, we've seen the Seth versus Drew match before twice. So we've seen those promos, we've seen those builds. So you have to add new elements in here to make things fresher, whether it's CM Punk or the Bloodline, Seth being distracted by the Bloodline. And you have to add new elements into Cody versus Roman as well, with The Rock coming in and him, you know, trying to assure the Bloodline's dominance and calling out Cody, his mom, and all this other stuff. We've seen the Cody-Roman promos last year. Now we're just starting to get a little physicality between Cody and the Bloodline leading up to this particular championship match. So I think with all these new elements, Punk and The Rock, it's all by design, but it's all designed to make it feel a lot fresher here. So, yeah, I don't think that Seth and Roman are overshadowed. If Roman doesn't want to be overshadowed, he better show up to a few more of these dates. But we only have like three dates left and one SmackDown left to go, or two SmackDowns left to go. So if Roman has a problem feeling overshadowed, he can show up for work once in a while.
Yeah, mute monster, real quick. That SmackDown next week is not going to be like a big mover shaker episode. Like at most, that's just like a couple of words each. Get into Mania. I mean, isn't that going to be a Hall of Fame ceremony typically? Andre the Giant, doesn't that get moved to that SmackDown as well? So yeah, that's not going to be much happening on that SmackDown either. Dwayne, what do you got?
No, I forget which one of you said something about how, eventually, you know, the anger from Roman about The Rock overshadowing him. Even last night, like how often during Jimmy's like reintroduction back into the Bloodline after he left, did Jimmy get in trouble with Roman for making decisions on his own, not consulting the tribal chief for making decisions? You know, who are we to say that, you know, Roman being the only one absent from Raw and, you know, The Rock showing up and attacking Cody, his main event opponent, like they could even spin that into the angle, like, you know, maybe on SmackDown, it's like, did I tell you to do that? Did you consult me? And like that could maybe where you start to see maybe the seeds of, you know, betrayal, for The Rock against Roman start to form. There's so many in terms of, you know, Seth and Roman being overshadowed. I mean, you get that face to face with Seth and Punk last night. That was awesome. The war of words between them. Again, to Parthy's point, Roman needs to be there. Like, you know, you kind of have to be there to either to not be overshadowed. Like The Rock has literally, I wanted to make this point in the chat, like, you know, going back to the first time he reappeared when he randomly showed up on whatever it was, Raw or SmackDown, like how many times has The Rock been on live WWE TV since that day compared to Roman? Because it might be pretty dead even. You know what I mean? It might be. The Rock has been a constant on WWE TV since he's been introduced to this storyline. You know, since he made that comment, you know, where am I going to sit at the table, at the table, the bar, whatever it is. So, I mean, yeah, Roman needs to be there to be a bigger part of the storyline. My only concern is somehow this affecting Cody getting his moment, getting his flowers, because we have this overshadowment of The Rock and this, that, and the other. And I really do believe the results of outside of the obvious, how night one ends, how that tag mat ends will obviously directly affect night two. Not even talking about the Bloodline rules. Like, how will that night end? Who's taking the pin? What are the circumstances of the pin? You know, is there outside interference? Maybe that's when we see the beginning of the Cody Avengers come into play. Like, there's so many different ways you can go about night two from night one. I couldn't be more excited, man. I just hope Cody gets his flowers on night two.
I think night one and night two booking are a perfect topic for next week's episode of Wrestling with Emotion for sure. Exactly how anyone would book those. We'll all get our submissions in. But Dwayne, I want to cue you up here and kind of want to go around the horn on our last topic here before general talk and discussions and sign off. Punk last night in Chicago, I thought it was a pretty good performance. At the same time, I don't know. He rubbed me a little like weirdly talking about being involved in the World Heavyweight Championship match. I don't know. It seems like he's just it seems like he's trying to make it about him versus being like, hey, you know what? I'm injured now, but the second I'm back, I'm going right for that title. I would have liked to see that versus what I saw last night. But I don't know about you, Dwayne. You check it off and let's go around.
I mean, it's not like it's his decision. Like, I mean, it's going to be there's he's interconnected with both guys that are fighting for the World Heavyweight Championship. There's a storyline with him and Seth that's been built in since before he came back in Chicago, you know, dating back years before that. There's already this built-in storyline where, like, Drew has been in, and Drew has been the antagonist. Like, would CM Punk be CM Punk if he just ignored that when he came back to WWE and ignored the fact that he's been nonstop trolled online for the better part of 2 months now? T-shirts made on him, like, would you lose respect?
Well, I think he looked like he looked a little silly saying he never used another person's name to sell a t-shirt when he's blatantly done it.
A couple things that made him look silly.
He stepped in some doo-doo on that promo. That's my only thing. I think he could have streamlined. He was in Chicago. He had all the momentum in the world. Instead, he's talking about he's doing mock counts with his left hand and everything. I don't know. I thought it was okay. And like we all know that CM Punk going back to Chicago, it's going to be a hero's welcome. Of course, I thought he could have just made a little bit better use of the platform. That was my take on it.
I don't know. I personally had no problem with it. And that's not just me being a CM Punk fan. It's just he's obviously going to be a part of this match in some way, shape, or form. I don't think he needs to introduce himself. I think it's going to
wait. You think he's going to be involved in the match?
100%.
Okay.
100%. 100%.
Okay. Parthy, do you agree?
You would be stupid not to have him be part of that match because of the built-in storyline between him and Seth and him and Drew and what's to come. Because obviously he's going to go away.
He's on commentary.
Huh?
He's on commentary.
You don't think he's going to get involved some way, shape, or form?
He might get out of his seat and say a couple words.
There's no way
Seth,
he doesn't get involved in stuff. I'm not saying he's going to go in there and start throwing swings or, you know, there is zero chance he does not get involved in some way, shape, or
form. World title match. You get someone disqualified.
All right. Real quick before Parthy goes. I think it's twofold. One, I don't want Rollins to lose the title in a hanky-janky like ending, like after he's had such a long reign with it, after he's had an illustrious reign with it. But part two is that if, you know, for example, they're ringside, you know, Rollins gets thrown into Punk and then something happens and Punk ends up costing it. That does build to the storyline. So that is a good point there, Dwayne. Parthy, what do you got?
Yeah,
that's a good point that he'd probably have to be physically instigated in order to get himself involved in this match. Because my point was going to be, well, who's he going to interfere on behalf of or who's he going to try to screw over? Because he equally hates both of these guys. And he said it himself, you know, he wouldn't be the most impartial referee. Which I actually think he would be the most partial referee because he wouldn't show favoritism to one guy or the other. It would be like
Shawn Michaels
repping Bret Hart and The Undertaker.
Why did he say he was impartial?
Yeah, but anyway, I think. Well, he'd probably be like, I recall a Steve Austin refereeing The Undertaker and Kane, where he basically just let them go at each other and he would ignore certain things that were against the rules, you know, and do a slow count for one guy and do a fast count for the other guy just to agitate somebody. But I guess other than that, you know what? Being a commentary is perfect for him. And the way he put it to say, you know, I'm going to do something that both of you guys and everything that you have never did before is make you interesting. It's a very good way to spin it as, you know, him being on commentary is a significant thing and not just, you know, a way to get him on WrestleMania. As far as, you know, he's definitely going to be in the world title picture. That's almost a foregone conclusion. Once he comes back, he's going to be coming after Drew, whether he has that world title or not. And he's eventually going to get around to Seth Rollins. He even dropped a hint of, you know, getting to Roman Reigns at somewhere down the line, whether Roman has the title or not. I think they threw a lot of good barbs at each other. There wasn't a whole lot of scripting going on. They just had some bullet points and they just, you know, went at each other with all their trolling shots. And Seth sort of coming in and sort of taking control and saying, hey, if you guys are done, you know, barbing at each other, we got business to take care of. We're going to have him a commentary wrestler, or ref or whatever. Seth coming out of this looking strong, you know, stomping Drew and standing tall at the end, I think is good for Seth, you know, helps for him what we earlier discussed, him being overshadowed. But I really like the dynamic of these three guys. There's no love lost between any all three of them. All three of them have legitimate reasons to dislike each other. Almost, you almost wish this was a triple threat match going in if Punk was healthy.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. If only this could have been a triple threat match, this would have been great. But I think I really enjoyed last night's promo. We always say the best promos come for the ones that are unscripted, and this was one of those ones that were unscripted. The jabs back and forth, Drew's just heel character right now is just one of a kind. Him going on to the commentator, the table, and then he's sitting down and he tells Punk, don't be a perv and look up my skirt. And then him putting his feet up.
PG, Punk, brother.
Yeah, PG, brother. Punk, literally when Seth's music hits, him going down to his knees and hitting his head with the mic. It was just awesome. And I think it's going to be great with him on commentary. I don't see an interference whatsoever. I don't really see that. But to add on, I know what Dwayne was saying earlier when we were in the last topic about what occurs at the end of night one will determine what happens night two. And I think that has to go along with this match too. It hasn't been mentioned. We talk about the subtle hints that Triple H has loved to do backstage. We talked about the one on the trailer. And there was another one. McIntyre was caught talking to Heyman last night. What is going to happen with Rock? Always mentions how just at a snap of his finger, he can eliminate this title from Seth. I think that's going to play into night two as well. And I just, this is another one, which is it's undertold right now, but there's also the story involved with it, even if these two aren't the main topic of the discussion right now.
How about CM Punk saying, hey, my tricep is torn, but I can still use my mouth to cut a promo and eat my wife's box. I thought that was pretty cool. But other than that,
Chicago popped for it, not surprisingly.
Yeah, I mean, they'll pop for anything he fucking says. The reason I don't need to see him like involved in this match is one, he's hurt, and two, like, why would he get involved? He's gonna give someone an upper hand. He hates both these guys' guts. He's already in the picture. He's going to fight one of them down the line, whoever has that title. He does not need to make his presence felt in a physical way. Could I see one of them ending up ringside and getting in his face and, like, talking some shit? Sure, but I think he should sit his ass down next to Michael Cole and stick to commentary because he's better at that these days than he is wrestling.
How about Michael Cole's comment after the segment about this being now Drew's losing focus on Seth because he's distracted by Punk, whereas he's been telling Seth he's been distracted by the bloodline. It's kind of a little bit of irony in there. A nice touch.
Yeah, I love Rob's point with Drew and Heyman of how that could play in night two in that world heavyweight title picture. You know, something happens. Drew ends up getting some help from the bloodline to capture that title. Who knows?
That could be a way. Sorry, go if you're not, you don't.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
That could be a way. Obviously, Roman talked about Punk on McAfee, and Punk mentioned him last night. Yeah. That could be a way of getting him involved in that match. Good is point. If, say, The Rock comes out. We all know the beef that Punk and Rock have had. So that could be a way to get Punk involved in that match.
And then none of us have touched on DP coming into the picture at any point either.
We'll save that for next week.
We got that case.
Yeah, that's very fair. We'll save that for next week as well. I want to say real quick, so let's get our final takes here. 30 seconds or less before we sign off here on the WWE show. With that said, anyone want to start?
Just get me to Philly already. That's all I can say.
Okay.
That's hard coming from a man that's going to an AEW show too in a week. He doesn't give a shit.
I got a final take.
No, I'm just saying you're overlooking it because you're so excited for Mania. I'm not blaming you, brother. Me too. Get me to Brooklyn and then get me to Philly. Hell yeah, let's go.
I got a final take, and it involves the final boss. I am as close as I've been on this entire run to not really caring if Cody finishes his story.
Oh,
what the final boss has done has just been art. It's been cinema. Woo! It's been amazing. So I'm not saying I'm all the way out. But if you were watching that segment last night and not being like, damn, The Rock is cooking, literally, That's all.
You don't want them to finish the story in Philadelphia?
I said I care as little about it as I have. I didn't say I don't want them to.
But I mean, this is going to be a Hammerstein Ballroom 2006 all over again, where you know, if Cena wins, we riot. I mean, it's going to be as close to that as I think it's going to be, because after last year having the rug pulled from under Cody, probably because of Vince McMahon, who knows? It's never been officially reported, but I have my thoughts and my feelings about it. If they don't finish it this year, after almost pulling it out from us with, you know, shoving Rock Roman down our throats, I mean, people are just either going to start throwing stuff in the ring or tuning out altogether. Or I don't know what's going to happen. They're building up to this like it's the final end game. They have to finish it.
You're complaining like about a Rock Roman SummerSlam championship match? I'm not complaining about Rock Roman SummerSlam
championship match. Oh. I'm complaining about Rock Roman headlining WrestleMania when they've been building to Cody finally finishing his story for the last year.
All right. Back to the final take. Dwayne, you got one?
I mean, this is my final take, but would that be like, was it 98 Bash at the Beach when Hogan joined the NWO? Was it 98?
96. Yeah.
96, sorry. Yeah, that, I mean, you probably get that type of reaction, if not worse, out of Philadelphia if they put it back on Roman. I just hope we hear a glass shatter on night two. I really, really do. And if that happens, I can give less of a shit about Rock and Roman. Give me Austin and Rock one more time. That's an interesting match. I'd be much more interested. Absolutely. Screw it. Give me them.
Dwayne.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Go back into the catalog and watch it, dude.
If that was ever done, it would have to be a cinematic match.
That's 110 plus years. I don't care, man.
One of the greatest rivalries.
You're asking for Goldberg Undertaker Part 2 right there. Exactly. You're asking for
it. No, you're not. Are you absolutely awesome? No, you're not. No, you're not.
All right.
No, you're not. Wayne,
Them trading blows, trading finishers in the middle of the ring while Cody Roman is going on and just have that moment?
I want one more match. Give it to me.
Rock doesn't have Austin one more match. He's got one more stunner selling
just over a year ago. Are you kidding me? That guy can give us one more match. Absolutely.
Okay.
You guys can shake that all enough. You want.
I disagree. I think The Rock has one more stunner. He doesn't have one more match.
Don't tell me you wouldn't.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, that's why it's the show where we don't wrestle with your budget. We don't wrestle with our conscience. It is the show that is wrestling with emotion. So have a good night now.
Yeah.